So good evening, everyone. Great to see you all, near and far, and farther. There's some Calgarians out there. Always good to see, and Edmontonians, and all the rest. So we have launched our practice period. We never did figure out whether it's the 19th or 20th. To consult the archives. But we've been doing this for quite a while, this period in the fall where we just intensify and strengthen our practice. And each person makes their own commitment about how they're going to do that, because we are not all in a monastery together. We are living lives with family and work responsibilities, various situations. And so, you know, we customize the practice period. And where else, and our theme, of course, as I said, is right relationship. Healing and nurturing connection. And what better place to start that than with our own body, the organ with which we encounter and interact with the world around us. As the old Zen ancestor Sherto said, "Do not separate from this skin bag here and now." I love that line. And yet, how often we do just that? Our attention is elsewhere, not paying attention to what our very own body is telling us. So this evening, we'll look at that relationship we have to our body. Dogen Zenji, the founder of our school of Zen in Japan, said, "To study the Buddha way is to study the self." Many of you are familiar with that line. So we might extend that to say, to study the self is to study the body. And by study, we know Dogen didn't mean academic study. He meant to be intimately familiar with, through attending to our life as it is, moment to moment. And in doing that, in attending to body and mind, we directly experience the truths of impermanence, no separate self, and dukkha. Dukkha, suffering, discontent, that pervasive wish things were going some other way that is characteristic of human existence. So we can't study the self without studying the body. So often, people come to meditation with the preconception that it's about training the mind to be quiet and empty, and that the mind is located where? In our head, right? You know, we say, "Oh, I can't get out of my head," right? False. You discover almost right away when you start meditation practice. Because what happens after 15 or 20 minutes, your body starts to hurt. There's a cramp in one shoulder, or in the middle of your back, or your knees hurt, or your stomach feels tense, or slightly queasy. And this is annoying because you're trying to clear your mind so you can be all zen and serene. This pesky body is getting in the way. And then you remember that you've got a paper due next week or a meeting you have to prepare for in a day or two. Oh no, you think, "I'm supposed to be paying attention to my breath. Oh, my breath is so shallow. I'm terrible at this meditation thing." But what if you were to begin your zazen with attending to the body? Just a friendly check-in, little body scan. You can do it sitting up. You know, laying down is nice because you can. This is very restful, but you can also do a body scan sitting, and feel into what's going on with your body right now. And at the same time, what's the feeling tone in your heart and mind? Is it anxious, annoyed, peaceful? Just checking in, right at the beginning of your zazen. And is there some sort of persistent habit of thought there You know, just as you begin your zazen, it's like a little systems check. If airlines didn't conduct comprehensive systems checks on their jets on a regular basis before flying, there would be a lot of disasters, right? So why do we propel ourselves through our days without pausing to check in with these complex systems that make up our body and mind? In the human psyche, emotion and cognition are inextricably intertwined with our bodily processes, as contemporary neuroscience is confirming with more and more sophistication. When we chant the Heart Sutra, we say that the five skandhas are empty. The sensations, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness are empty, which means that they don't function or exist in isolation, but only in relation to each other. They're inextricable from each other, these functions that make up our being. That's all the Heart Sutra is saying. You know, you can't just extract one of them. So we cannot attend to the mind without attending to the body. We can't attend to thoughts without attending to emotions. The neuroscientist Antonio Damasio, who wrote a book called Descartes' Error, Emotion, Reason, and the Human Brain, started to explore this relation between emotion and cognition, or emotion and reason, by observing historical cases and his own patients who had traumatic brain damage, which left virtually all their cognitive abilities intact, but destroyed their ability to feel emotion. The result? They were severely impaired in personal and social interactions, in terms of decision-making and ethical behavior. They could not hold down most jobs because of this. They could or function well in their families and relationships. Their lives came apart at the seams, though all the typical indicators showed that their basic intelligence remained intact. So what was missing? It turned out that what was damaged was the area in the brain that was the part that perceives bodily feelings, that perceives that queasiness in the stomach, that perceives that catch in the throat. That's what was damaged. So it seems like that this capacity seems closely linked to the ability to feel and be aware of one's emotions, and thus to exercise complex judgment and ethical decisions. So this research suggests that even if we're not severely impaired, like Damasio's brain-injured patients, that body awareness may be linked to our emotional intelligence. It seems that the mind can't function fully without the body. Indeed, the mind functions throughout the body, as in the well-known koan, case 89 from the Blue Cliff Record. Some of you will know this right away. Yunyan asked Dawu, these were Dharma brothers, if I recall correctly, how does the Bodhisattva of great compassion use all those hands and eyes? So he's referring to Kanon or Kuan Yin with the thousand arms, right? And each one has an eye in the palm of the hand to see the suffering being, and a tool to respond to the suffering being. So 1,000 limitless arms. How does the Bodhisattva of great compassion use all those hands and eyes? And Dawu replies, it's like feeling behind you for a pillow in the middle of the night. In other words, it's just like one part of the body reaching to relieve the discomfort of another part of the body. No separation. Nyonyan says, I understand. Wait a minute, who said that? Sorry, you don't need to weep. And Dawu said, what do you understand? The whole body is hands and eyes. And then Yunyan says, well, that's very well expressed, but it only says 80%. These guys are, they like to tease each other. And then he says, what would you say, older brother? He says, all through the body are hands and eyes. All through the body are the hands and eyes of compassion. We perceive each other with our whole bodies. Our nervous system extends through our whole body, right? And there are nerve centers in our belly and heart area that not only receive signals from the brain, but send signals to the brain. So it's been called our visceral brain, you know. Our whole body is a unified configuration of sensory functions through which we perceive and interact with the world. We are a permeable interactive skin bag. Among the earliest of Buddha's teachings, the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha gives detailed instructions for practicing with the Satipatthana, the four foundations of mindfulness: form, feelings, mind, and objects of mind. Now, we're not going to go over all those, that we could take a whole series to do justice to the four foundations of mindfulness. But the first one, form, means our body, our material body. And the Buddha gives a set of very specific practices to cultivate mindfulness of the body, which we just did. The first, after we did our body scan, we did the three breath practices, noticing in and out, following the breath, and breathing with the whole body. Those are the first ones that they go, those practices go all the way back to the Buddha's teachings. This is a lovely book by the Vietnamese Zen teacher, the beloved Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, called Transformation and Healing, on the Sutra of the Four, he says, establishments of mindfulness. Foundations is also commonly used. And he says, when body and mind are one, the wounds in our hearts, minds, and bodies begin to heal. As long as there is separation between body and mind, these wounds cannot heal. During sitting meditation, the three elements of breath, body, and mind are calmed, and gradually they become one. When peace is established in one of the three elements, the other two will soon have peace also. For example, if the body is in a very stable position, all the muscles and the nervous system are relaxed, then the mind and the breath are immediately influenced. If we practice conscious breathing in the right way, our breathing becomes more regular, calm, and harmonious with every moment, and this regularity, calmness, and harmony of the breathing will spread to our body and mind. And the body and mind will benefit from it. So these three elements, breath, body, and mind, synergistic. Another practice is mindfulness of the body in the Four Noble Postures of meditation: sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. And then extending that awareness to the other activities in daily life. Sometimes when we're in longer retreat in Sesshin, you get to practice more with all four postures in your work, and then also in your work practice, sweeping the floor, chopping carrots for soup. Yeah, so taking your body practice into all your activities. And then comes the practice of detailed awareness of the various parts of the body, which we do in body scanning. And that not only increases the articulation of our body awareness, but also our awareness of the interconnection of the body parts. Another wonderful practice that I really love is bringing awareness to the elements: earth, water, fire, air, and in Buddhism, consciousness is is the fifth element. Within and without the body. They're beautiful meditations where you actually feel the earth element in your body and outside your body, the water element in your body, outside your... It's nice, it's really nice to do when you're out in the natural environment, to do the elements, to meditate on the elements. So that's another one. And the last one, and I'm just, that one gives us a, almost like a palpable sense of our interconnection with the whole world, the elements that make us up, along with everything else. The last one that the Buddha gives in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness is where we imagine our body as a corpse going through the stages of decomposition quite graphically. I won't read them to you right now. Down to the skull and bones and finally dust. And this is to teach us in almost a, you know, an embodied way about impermanence. The impermanence of this body to which we're so attached, and of course to all material things. So we could devote days to all these practices. We could do a whole retreat just on these body practices. But I'm just giving you this brief survey to show you how fundamental a body awareness was to the Buddha's teachings in early times. And it's too easy in Zen practice to kind of skip over that and think it's all happening up in your head. But 2,000 years later, after the Buddha's lifetime, Dogen Zenji wrote in a text called Body and Mind Study the Way. To study the way with the body means to study the way with your own body. It is to the study of the way using this lump of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything that comes forth in the study of the way is the true human body. The entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. That's typical Dogen language. But he's talking about this human body as a boundlessly interconnected organism, in the same way that he talks about the mind. He'll say the mind is the trees, the grasses, the river, the mountains and the rivers. The body is the medium through which we interact with the world around us and perceive our surroundings. The medium through which we take in nourishment and excrete waste. It's also our vehicle for awakening. Rooted in the muddy water of our messy human lives, the lotus of awakening opens. The entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. But there are two aspects to our relationship to our body. We've been talking so far about the basic awareness of the body itself. Sensations of pleasure and pain, tension, relaxation, warmth, coldness. Our awareness of the body when it's out of balance or ill. Michael's going to talk about that on Sunday. The other aspect is how we feel about our body, what we think about our body. The body is the driving force of our appetites and desires, so we have ambivalent feelings about it. It's hard to control. Religions have all too often resorted to teaching us to loathe our bodies in order to get us to behave properly. In the early Buddhist suttas, there are passages that recommend that young monks visualize the bodies of beautiful, seductive women dancers, and then imagine them aging and seeing their bodies as repulsive, and then seeing them as rotting corpses. Now, this may have been an effective way of managing youthful hormones, but it didn't instill very wholesome respect for women. or honoring women of age. Christianity has instilled its share of body loathing over the centuries as well. The body as the seat of carnal desires, the female body as the dangerous arouser of those desires. And the Western philosophical division of mind and body hasn't helped. The legacy of those attitudes of body loathing and body-mind splitting is still with us today in so many ways that hinder us from truly loving and caring for our bodies as the vessels of our lives. How do you feel when the body doesn't perform the way you want it to? When you're sick or injured or impaired or aging? Again, Michael's going to talk more about that on Sunday. Are there parts of your body that you feel more friendly towards and appreciative of, and other parts you feel critical or even hostile towards? Think of the messages we get about what we're supposed to look like and what we're supposed to weigh and what color our hair is supposed to be. So what are the social and cultural conditioning factors that have shaped all these attitudes? What would it be like to care for your body as lovingly, and to support, what would it be like to care for your body lovingly, to support living your life fully, without the push-pull of vanity versus disparagement, right? You're always kind of pulled between vanity or disparaging the body. How would the Eightfold Path, we talked about the Eightfold Path over the weekend, how would it support right relationship to your body? With right view, right intent, right speech, right conduct, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. All of those we could apply to our relationship to our body. So these are the questions that I'd like to sort of send you home with this evening to take up in your practice. Any of those questions that kind of spark for you, please take them home with you and notice and make sure in your practice, in your home practice, to take a little extra time to attend to the body. See what your body has to say to you. So that will leave us plenty of time, I think, to divide into small groups. And we have time, I think, to make the groups a little larger so you can hear some different voices, maybe. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four, five. Anyway, Zendo people, divide yourselves in half. So one person needs to come over to this side. No. one person. Okay, yeah, if you would. And then kind of make yourself into a little circle, but not too close. And I will divide the Zoom people into groups, and I'm going to make the groups larger, four or five, so you hear different voices. And okay, here's your question that you're going to consider. Two questions. What social and cultural attitudes towards the body influence you growing up? Okay, what social and cultural attitudes toward the body influence you growing up? And what is one way you'd like to give more mindfulness and care to your body? You might have more than one, but at least one way. Okay? So it's not a discussion. What this is a practice of speaking and listening from the heart. So each person will take a turn, and the others will just listen. And each person will take about 5 times 3. Yeah, about 3 to 4 minutes. And I will ring the bell to time you so you know to keep going. Zoom people, you'll have to self-time. Okay, there are 10 of you. Okay, I'm going to divide. So Zendo people, please tell each other your names. Zoom people, likewise, once I get you into groups. And Zoom people, you'll have to self-time. Okay, Zendo people, go ahead and start while I arrange these Zoom people in rooms. Okay, here goes.
Louise.
Nikita.
Oops.
I can start. I usually deploy time last.
River, why can't I answer? Oh, there.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Calgary, and
I'm okay. Yeah. Come on.
I think the image that I grew up with as a young boy was, of course, the cowboy.
When I was young,
because there were a number of cowboy shows on TV, and Calgary has the Stampede, which is a kind of cowboy festival. So those kind of images of masculinity.
And I wanted to be tall so badly
I never
that
cry.
I walked my tiptoes over. And eventually walked on my tiptoes so much that
show emotion,
my heels seized.
Unless it's anger.
And had to get
or
an operation.
That's about it.
With
there wasn't too much
heels
else to it. and be good.
So it's like the
white ass. And so, I think in terms of the body, I didn't really understand a lot of the natural emotions that arise. Longing, those emotions that were more subtle than the kind of hammer to the nail big emotions. So it's kind of confusing. And the other thing about cowboy is that the body is talking to the body a little bit. You deal with
your children,
follow through whatever.
It's always there for me. It's happening
to the body.
But I drag it in those awkward places and do
the weirdest things. It's still there. It's still there. It's still there. It's still
there.
Second question is how one thing that you would like to do to take care of and attend to your body.
Oh, yeah.